Good morning. It's the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan, Blake Murphy, Ailish Forfar, J.D. Bunkus, the Toronto Raptors, Game 6.
It's finally time.
Tonight. It is. It feels like it's been an eternity, but the Raptors are staying big chillin', in the words of Precious Achiuwa. No sweat on the Toronto Raptors side.
I might be sweating.
Lots of sweat on the Philadelphia 76ers side. Doc Rivers is mad at us. Rivers is mad at everyone, except for Doc Rivers. Doc Rivers is throwing strays at guys like Gordon Giracek from the early 2000s. The 76ers are not in a great place. The Toronto Raptors.
That's funny that that's who you thought of. I thought of Daryl Armstrong.
Yeah. I mean, Gordon Giracek was third on that team in usage rate. We'll get into that in a little bit. It's game six day. It's a fun sports day in the city. The Toronto Blue Jays at 3 o'clock today will try to win their four-game series against Boston Red Sox. They dropped 1-7-1 last night. Up 2-1 in the series. Getaway day for the Red Sox today. 3 p.m. Alek Manoah on the hill. And then you can roll right from that into Raptors 76ers game six at 7 o'clock.
And you can see us at the Blue Jays game. Lucky fans, if you're attending, look for us in the stands. Having a little team trip.
You can see me for like
a team
once
outing.
Through the order. I'm on a Ross Stripling pitch count today. I got to get to the arena for like the basketball arena for like, I got to be there for like 5.
The game starts at 3. You can spend.
Yeah, and I have to be at the arena for 5. Okay, how long do you think once through the order takes?
10 minutes. Yeah, it's a 10-minute walk.
Also, like once through the order takes like an hour, though.
Yeah.
First 3 innings.
We'll see you there.
Anyway, I'm on a, let me get my Ross Stripling jokes off. I'm on a pitch count. JD. Sixers are dead? That was a question
Sixers
mark?
Sixers feel dead. Sixers feel dead. And Sixers feel dead because of that quote you referenced. Let's just play it now. Vic, run Doc Rivers yesterday speaking about his 3-0, or sorry, his history with blowing 3-1 leads in the playoffs.
Well, it's easy to use me as an example, but I wish y'all would tell the whole story with me, all right? My Orlando team is the 8th seed. No one gives me credit for getting up against the Pistons who won the title. That was an eighth seed. Go look at that. I want you to go back and look at that roster. I dare you to go back and look at that roster, and you would say, what a hell of a coaching job. Really. I mean, the Clipper team that we lost 3-1. Chris Paul didn't play in the first two games and was playing on one leg. And we didn't have home court. And then the last one, to me, is the one we blew. That's the one I said, we blew that. And now it was in the bubble. And anything could happen in the bubble. There's no home court. Game 7 would have been in L.A., you know. But it just happened. So I would say with me, some of them is I got to do better always. I always take my own responsibility. And then some of it is circumstances happen. You know, this one, let's win it, and we don't have to talk about it.
Excuses.
Honestly, that's one of the worst quotes I've ever. I can't believe that a veteran coach like Doc Rivers, who's been around the game this long, who is a player and who is a coach, and who has been in media markets like Boston and LA. Granted, Clippers LA, right? Not anybody paying attention to LA Kawhi, which I think you and Paul George learned very quickly. It didn't matter that you guys went there because nobody cared. Tree falls in the woods kind of situation when you play for the Clippers. But for a guy of his history, a guy of his stature, to drop that quote, I was in shock. I literally sat there yesterday. I watched that video on my phone, and I sat there and I thought, these guys are dead. I had confidence in going into this series about the Raptors. I felt good about the Raptors. A team that isn't thinking about that doesn't have a coach who has that answer. I was nervous for Sixers fans when Joel Embiid said James Harden needed to be more aggressive. I was nervous when Joel Embiid said he was thinking constantly about protecting his thumb when he was catching the ball around the basket. But watching Doc Rivers ask for credit from the media for getting a 3-1 lead in a series
and blowing
with
it.
An Orlando Magic team that had no one, again, other than my guy Daryl Armstrong, who I thought of in that situation. I'm pretty sure the team had Tracy McGrady
won the scoring title that season.
He got the clamps put on him by I think
either way
would have been Tayshaun Prince in that series. Yeah, but
yeah, either way, for Doc Rivers to have that meltdown was such a window into the soul of the Sixers, which is they're okay. You guys, Ailish, you golf? Like, don't hit the tree, don't hit the tree, don't hit the tree. What are you gonna do? You're gonna hit the ball right into the tree.
It's gonna hit you back.
Like, that's what Doc Rivers is doing right now. He's like, no, we're not blowing 3-0 lead. We're not blowing 3-0 lead. We're not blowing 3-0 lead. And the Sixers got, I can already see, and the Philadelphia 76ers are the first team in NBA history to blow a 3-0 lead as the Toronto Raptors advance to face Kyle Lowry and the Miami Heat. That's just an inevitability at this point. After that quote yesterday, that was an inevitability.
I love the idea of the Philadelphia 76ers in 2020 are thinking about making a coaching change, and they sit down, they're interviewing candidates, and Joel Embiid is like, okay, give me your excuse making. Who would you throw under the bus in this scenario? What excuse would he make in this scenario? And Doc's like, oh, yeah, well, Daryl Armstrong, obviously. I'll blame this on Tobias Harris years from now. Doc Rivers has coached in the NBA for 23 seasons. He has over 1,000 regular season wins, over 100 playoff wins. He has an NBA championship ring. He has a coach of the year. He was named one of the 15 greatest coaches in NBA history this year.
All of that is gone now. All of that is gone. It's on the line.
You should not have to also be like, please give me credit for putting myself in a good situation to blow things. The move there is obviously, it's one of two things. It's either don't acknowledge it at all, like just breeze past it because those are different teams and those are different series and you're above it because you're supposed to be one of the 15 greatest coaches of all time. Why would you care about a series you lost in 2003? Or you just, I mean, not even, there's not even an or. You just don't give it lip service. Or you just say, well, hey, those are different teams and we're going to blow past it. Also, like, some of his memory is shaky on some of those teams, some of the excuses that he had there. We can get into that if we want, but Ailish, if you're in that locker room and you hear that quote and you hear him being that defensive, what are you like? That can't be a good tone setter, right?
Honestly, embarrassing. If you're on that team and you hear your coach pleading to the media and justifying, like, "Oh, guys, like, just give me the flowers I deserve." Like, there's another spin. I know you said maybe there's no but what if it's like, "Hey, yeah, this has happened to me 3 times. It's not gonna happen again." You know, like, we're going to overcome this. Yeah, these things happened, and I don't want to have this legacy with my name. Like, that's something you can at least spin zone. Remember we talked about the hockey version of basketball talk? Maybe that's it. But, yeah, it's a very tough thing if you're a player to hear your coach kind of getting petty about it and letting it get under his skin. Like, this is a chess game, the next 2 games. You're going to need to be the most mentally tough team out there. And that starts from your leadership and all the way down, trickles through the top players on your team to the bench guys. And if your coach is already coming in with that chip on his shoulder and the little bit of poutiness, like, think about it if the calls don't go his way tonight. Oh, well, that's why we blew the lead. The refs weren't on our side. Or we had both of our players injured. Like, there's already the excuses written in a notebook somewhere, and he's ready to plead to the media when they seemingly inevitably blow it
in 2026 when his team's blowing a 3-0 lead again, and he's like, well, give me credit for getting up 3-0 on the Raptors. Now look, as someone who lies about his track record and makes excuses in the wake and rake all the time, I was sitting there taking notes.
Yeah,
I was like, I'm using this for the wake and rake. I'm using this for the wake and rake. Mo Justro,
no, you wouldn't,
all that stuff.
See, that's the thing about this though, is I don't think he meant it to come off that way at all. And that's what's so terrifying to me if I'm a Sixers fan, and what makes me feel so emboldened if I'm a Raptors fan there, is to me, what he's trying to do there is go, I'm not the guy who just blows 3-1 leads the way you think I am. I've been a victim of circumstance a few times, and a couple of times it has been me, but this narrative of we're going to blow this series because I'm here is a false narrative. It's a red herring for those of you that weren't paying attention to my track record. The problem is he stammered his way through it because he is nervous. Had he just been confident, he would have gone up there and he would, and hey, far be it from me to tell somebody something didn't come off the way that you intended it to. Like, that's my entire thing. But, Doc, that's what I saw. I saw it. It's a window into your soul. What happened there? You stood at the podium, and all he wanted to say was, I've blown 3-1 leads before. Not all of them are the same. And this is different than some of those other times. End quote. And instead he's like, and the magic. I was on the magic. And it goes, oh my God, you've been thinking about this. You didn't sleep last night. Oh, you've been thinking about everything. You went through the entire list of the teams that you played and the scenarios in which you lost. And you're in a mental bind about this. You're thinking about it when you go eat a sandwich. You're thinking about it in the shower. You're thinking about it when you brush your teeth. You're thinking about it when Austin Rivers is calling you to tell you about him losing to Steph Curry again, because that's his legacy, is the guy who gets bodied by him. Like, that's all you're thinking about, blowing it. And that's what I'm saying about the don't hit the tree, is that Doc Rivers is just staring right at the tree, and he can't look anywhere else. And if he's staring at the tree, and A-list, that's what I'm saying, we're talking about leadership, that's where his players are going to look too. And I don't really think that the Sixers have the guy who pulls them out of that rut. I don't think that they have the player who goes, like, all Joel Embiid's ever known is failure, right? All he's ever known is playoff failure, right? Okay, fine. He's had good regular seasons and made it to the NBA, all right? I don't want to get into the Russell Westbrook thing of I'm all winner because I made the NBA. So you're going to look in your foxhole at a guy who blew a series lead last year to an Atlanta Hawks team, and they made Trae Young look like a god. Trae Young plays a real basketball team. He scores 11 points. He's like, he can't even do anything. They look at James Harden. What has he done? Blow leads. The famous game against San Antonio. The famous game against the Golden State Warriors. And yes, of course, Chris Paul excuses, and he has his excuses as well. But you're not telling me that when Doc Rivers stands at that podium and he starts telling about the times he lost that way, that his players don't start thinking about the ways they lost those series? Who's the guy they're leaning on? Tobias Harris? Who's the winner? Who's the shake-up piece? I got to tell you, again, if we're doing Leafs parallels, this is my nightmare with the Leafs, is that when they're down in a series, they're looking around the dressing room and they go, oh my God, it's all the same losers that were here losing before. Who's pulling us out of this? It's all the same guy. That's the fear.
Oh, no, you again.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, no, it's the Russian doll thing where it's like we're back in the same room. Gotta get up. Like, they're back in the same room.
Great track.
I'm terrified of the Sixers fan. I'm peeing down my leg. It's over for you guys. It's done. It's dead. Sixers are dead. Congrats to the Toronto Raptors. I don't know. All of a sudden, we're talking, could you get by a Heat team? I'm already looking past them. I'm like, Jimmy Butler's banged up. Kyle Lowry's banged up. Are the Heat that? Do we have Celtics-Raptors in the Eastern Conference Finals happening here?
Look, the real, if you're a true Raptors fan who's been through this stuff, that what you're looking ahead to is, oh no, Max Strus. How do you guard Max Strus? He's going to drop 30 in one of these games.
Probably.
But you compare the Doc Rivers stuff, and yes, the Raptors are playing. They entered the series with less pressure. You get down 3-0 and there's less pressure. And Nick Nurse will mention, hey, we lost a couple rotation guys early in the series, but he got asked about trailing 0-3 yesterday. And he says, my concern was get better and play better. And I think we've done that. Obviously, we didn't handle the first games very well. We put ourselves in the hole we're in, and we're still in a hole. That, to me, is like, that's all the accountability you need. If you're Doc Rivers, you're like, hey, yeah, we were up 3-0, and we let two opportunities to close it out get away. That's on us, and we're going to take care of it from here. So part of the Doc Rivers quote is, I wish you guys would tell the whole story. I have the whole stories here if you guys would like them.
Yes, I do want them, but also that's another insane thing to say. I wish you guys would tell the whole story. Every time you go, Doc Rivers is blown multiple 3-1 leads, you go, okay, Doc Rivers is blown multiple 3-1 leads. Here is the full story of Doc Rivers. And you start going and narrating. You go, in 1999, Doc Rivers
was born in 1951.
A 38-year-old Doc Rivers coached coaches an Orlando Magic team to a 500 record. Expectations
are low. I'm sitting in a big armchair with a brandy right now.
I wish you guys would tell the whole story. We all wish you would tell the whole story, Doc. That's how life works, okay? We get turned into our best and worst moments. That's life. That's how we process things. But anyways, go on. Tell us how bad this is.
Yeah, it is.
No, tell us the whole story. Sorry, that's what Doc wants.
I will tell you the whole story. So, and Doc Rivers isn't going to like it, but he asked. In NBA history, the league as a whole is 253-13 with a 3-1 lead. That's a 95.1% winning percentage. Doc Rivers is 5-3. Doc Rivers is 5-3. So that's 62%. So he's only, you know, like. Think about that. You have a 3-1 lead and you only win 5 out of the 8 times. And the rest of the league is what? What does that make it? 248-10 in league history. So you have 3 of the 13 blown 3-1 leads in league history. And yes, again, Doc Rivers is in these situations more often because he's lasted so long as a coach and he's had so much playoff success. He's been in a lot of playoff series. That much you give him.
I'll tell you what, he blows this and that's the end of his coaching career. Like, it's there's no more chances after this. Like, the Lakers, I know, it's done. There's unless you're coaching a team that has no playoff aspirations, like, he's going back into the time machine.
Go rebuild somewhere.
It's good that he brought up the Orlando Magic because he blows 3-0, and, Blake, those opportunities are done. But, yes, continue.
He hasn't won. He won a championship in 2008. He won Coach of the Year in 2000. This is a long time ago now. So, that Orlando Magic team in 2002-2003... basically, Doc Rivers calls them a little league team. You look at who carried the biggest load for them, and it's like, yes, your guy Daryl Armstrong, Drew Gooden, Gordon Giericek. It's not the best. T-Mac gets clamped by Tayshaun Prince, but two things about his explanation there. The first is that the Pistons didn't win the championship that year. They went on the next round. I think they got swept. The second is
that was a good sell he did at the beginning to me as I went I was like, that's pretty good, that's true, hey, they lost the champs.
He basically came second though.
Exactly, not anymore. Blake Murphy just told the whole story. Turns out the first part of the story was a lie.
Okay, you got swept by Jason Kidd and Kenyon Martin in the next round.
So, chapter one, the great lie. Okay, continue.
Yes, but and also in game 6 and 7 of that series, they got blown off the floor. So they weren't even, like, if they had lost close games to a really good team, it's one thing. But your team's no-showed. So you skip ahead to 2014-2015, and they blow it against, ironically, James Harden's Rockets. What I don't understand about the explanation here is he says, well, Chris Paul missed 2 games. Yeah, he missed 2 games. You won. You got Chris Paul back.
Yeah.
And blew the 3-1 lead. He also, like, Chris Paul was hobbled in that series, but he put up 21-10 really, really efficiently. I don't understand why getting Chris Paul back in that series is framed like a bad thing. And once again, blown out in game 5, not particularly close in game 7, and game 6 in that series is one of the biggest collapses in playoff history, where they blew a 13-point fourth quarter lead with a chance to close the series out. Then you go 2019-2020. Like he says, it's the bubble.
Oh, it's the bubble.
Yeah, it's the one that he takes more accountability for. Kawhi and Paul George, they look okay. They're 5-3 in the bubble ramp up. They beat Luka's Mavs in 6. And then they get outplayed by Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray. Again, though, the concern here that I would have, because
no, that was a meltdown. That one's on Paul George, but yes.
Yeah. And Kawhi didn't play that great in that series either.
Well, he quit on them in that final game. Kawhi went into full, no, I don't care anymore. You guys
what
are
did I do?
Something.
We're in the bubble. Can I go to Toronto? Can I go back to Toronto?
Now that I think about it, how did those guys ever not stick together? It's like all those guys, they were the Michael Scott Mexican standoff where they're all doing those finger guns with Andy. And this is a reference for Ailish and Dwight. Yeah. Where it's like
and
Dwight.
Pam.
Dwight, Kawhi, and Paul George all just blaming each other, just staring at one another. It's all your fault.
The other thing that happens in that collapse, and this is what is a big concern to me if I'm on the Philly side, is once again, games 6 and 7 in that series aren't particularly close. Mm-hmm. So in each of these 3-1 collapses, there were 2 games where Doc Rivers' teams weren't particularly competitive even. So I don't know. If you come out tonight and Philly looks awesome in the first quarter, sure. Maybe you've righted the ship. Maybe you've turned a corner. But this just, again, we've been saying it all series and since the series started. If you punch this team in the mouth, I don't know that they respond well to it. And it makes, like, Raptors fans, if you are not in your seats ready to go at 6:45 tonight,
6 o'clock,
because that Sixers team can be taken out of the game. A Doc Rivers team can be taken out of the game. We've seen this with this group of individuals. We've seen this with all the examples in league history of blowing 3-1 leads. Crowd on your side early is a huge, huge thing if you're going to pull this off. So get there quick, Blake, guys.
Blake, you have truly become a Toronto broadcaster now that it's like there's those Instagram videos where it's when you become a dad and they give someone the New Balance shoes, you know, and they go, ah, this is where you become the dad. This is you becoming a Toronto sports broadcaster is going, fans, if you – like, yeah. Blake's firing off a tweet complaining about the fans not being in their seats on time.
But if you do that, you're
on the verge. You're ready to join the club because
look,
that is –
it was enough that game four of that series – I got asked to put a tweet out about, like, hey can you tell fans that this is –
that's
like,
just a Toronto.
Who asked you that?
No.
Everyone assumes that tip-off time is going to be 15 minutes later than it's listed, right? That's just the NBA playoffs. But that one was like a 6:02 tip-off or whatever it was.
Listen, that's all. I love this city.
And we get the people in the text line, like our pal Doug, who get there a little late and are confounded by the long lines or whatever. Just get there in time.
I love this city, but we will never be a show up on time city. It's just not going to happen. And it's okay. It's just like you have to accept it. I don't think there's ever going to be a time where we get there and it's, oh, wow, the crowd is punctual. We're here. We're everybody's in the seats. The one good thing about Toronto sports fans is it's not a leave early city if the game is meaningful. Like, it's a usually stick with it crowd.
It's because they rearranged Union Station and it's honestly a zoo and you don't know how to get to Scotiabank Arena without a map.
I mean, that's part of it is that
place
was...
That's my tiny excuse for the fans.
Except for finally it's done. Finally it's ready.
That's right.
Like, it was forever. It was. I thought we would be living with Union Station being under construction in perpetuity. And then now it actually just one day finished. But also when they finished the construction, they went, how do you like it? And I went, isn't this exactly how it was? And they go,
shinier?
What? Shut up.
There's a worse here now. Yeah, exactly.
They put it under construction for a decade so that we could have it look the exact same, except for one area where you can get quicker up to the left. Anyway, the thing that unites Toronto people, I think about this all the time, is what does it mean to be from here, right? What unites us? What is our sense of community? And it's traffic. It's traffic. That's all it is.
Waiting in line for ice cream.
Yeah, it's hard to get places, and that's it. That's Toronto. Hey, you have to go somewhere, it's going to be hell. So going to a game, it's going to be hell. You're going to be late. It's just the way that it is. You're going to think that it's later than it is. You're going to get – also, you know what else? Drinking beer. So people get their beer in the line. They would rather miss tip-off because they got to get – they're chicken fingers and a beer, and I get it. It's not for me. I'm a get-in-the-seat person, but this is just who the city is. Either way, I agree, Blake, that the beginning of this game could tell you everything. Like, I don't think the Sixers are going to fall down early and then tough it out and come back. I think the Sixers are going to get smacked in the face, and they're going to do exactly what they've done when they get smacked in the face in this series, and that's wilt. And that's why I think they need this game. I think they need this game because they've had the rest. They've had a few games off. Joel Embiid this is it for him. I think that he gives you his best punch tonight. I think that James Harden on the road gives you, I don't even know what James Harden's going to, I don't think James Harden cares. I really don't. I think James Harden was like shopping online for handbags yesterday and he was like not even thinking about this game. He's already messaging to baby, where are we going, Spain or France on Sunday? He's checked out. He's done. He's not there mentally. I think the only guys that care, I think Tobias Harris cares, and I think he's going to give them a good game, and that's it. That's the end of the list. Maxie's too young. I think he hasn't been scarred by any of this, but he's gone from a Fred VanVleet who couldn't stop anything downhill with Maxie to actual defenders, and it's completely changed the series for him, which kind of brings me to the Fred question, but yeah.
Yeah, let's pocket Fred just for a second. I don't want to make Raptors fans overconfident here, obviously. The Philadelphia side of this is scary. And we're going to talk
honestly, show up late. It's already over. Show up. Sell your tickets and save up for the next round.
Yeah. Wait until – once Jordan Romano hits the mound at like 6:15, then head over, because then you know it's locked up. So in addition to pulling the Doc Rivers playoff series history, I also took a look at the Raptors right now are the 14th team to ever force a game six down 3-0. Three of those teams have forced a game seven. Nobody's won, but I looked across those teams to try to find, hey, maybe there's a common thread here. It's tough because those things happened in 1951, 1994, and 2003. Not exactly, my knowledge of the 1951 Rochester Royals is not all that sharp. And then like the 1994 series, like that's when teams just realized that you get 3 points for shooting behind the 3-point line. So there's like, it's not the same style of basketball and the variance of threes changed things. However, the consistent thing across those three teams, and especially with the Blazers who almost pulled it off against the Dirk Mavericks, every one of those teams that forced a game seven were teams that were, they had a depth advantage like 3-7 in the series. Every one of those instances was the other team was very, very reliant on one star scorer, and the team outplayed the individual led offense for three games to force a game seven. Yes. So look, Embiid's in the Dirk role here. Obviously, Dirk had a bit of a reputation in the playoffs as well until he won a championship. You go back and you look at those Nuggets teams, and they have seven guys scoring in double figures against the Stockton Malone Jazz. Those 1951 Knicks that you guys obviously know so well.
Yes, actually.
They did it. They were a very young team, too, which, hey, the Raptors are as well. So, yeah, this is basically the Raptors are built like the teams that have done this before. But done this is force a game seven, not win. No one's won it. You get to be the whole precedent, the whole sample if you win it.
But maybe the little edge that, okay, forcing the game seven and winning the game seven is everything we started with the top of the show, with the coach being completely distracted by the narrative, by not having the leadership, and by the Raptors having that scrappy, why not us mentality that I think gives them that edge over the other teams that you mentioned, hopefully.
You'd hope.
You would hope.
I love the 51 Knicks.
Huge fan of them.
Our big bomb. Knicks. Our 1951 New York Knicks.
I'm starring them right now. The following players: Ray Lump, Tex.
Ray Lump
from NYU. Why is that so funny to me? Ray Lump, because he's such a hilarious name. Ray Lump, Tex Ritter, Connie Simmons, Gene James, George Kaftan, Harry Gallatin, Ray Ellefson, Nat Clifton, Vince Borila.
Don't forget Dick
Who
McGuire.
Are those guys?
Dick McGuire.
Vic, honestly, that's rude. Vic went too far with who are you guys. Yeah. So this guy's NBA players. All right? This is legend. Amazing names. Amazing names.
This is the stakes tonight. Precious Achiuwa, Chris Boucher. You could be the Tony Lavelli and George Kaftan of Toronto basketball.
Someday people will look back on that and like, you can be the Ray Lump. You know, you can be the Ray Lump. Someone will be the Ray Lump on this team. Yeah, by the way, that someone doesn't look like it's going to be Fred VanVleet. He's doubtful tonight, as per Blake Murphy.
Because he's got a Ray Lump on his hip.
Ooh. Yeah, well, here's the thing, though. I can't get over it. I don't know. I don't even feel like it's necessary, but we've done this kind of Fred VanVleet, should they, shouldn't they? But I think everybody knows they shouldn't. This isn't the series for Fred. And I'm done with the whole he was hurt before thing, because he wasn't. He couldn't stop a straight line drive. And we can say this stuff about the injury excuses, whatever. But now, kind of looking back on this series, it really does feel a little bit like Fred killed them early. Like, if you're looking back on game three, it's Fred couldn't hit a shot all game long, got barbecued through games 1-3, and the real shift here that you should kind of feel confident about is that he's not coming back into the series. And I don't know. I don't know where that puts them, but it does feel a little awkward right now that, and I mentioned this to you guys, the reason why I'm bringing this up is not because I take any pleasure in it, because we all like Fred VanVleet. We all believe he's a winning player, and a winning player doesn't mean that you're good for every series, but it's a tough matchup. It's a matchup-based sport. He wasn't a good matchup here, but I mentioned how him getting hurt ended up being a blessing earlier in the season, because it unlocked more of point guard Scotty, more of Siakam and Scotty, and the two-headed monster of both these guys going downhill with the ball. And now I'm kind of thinking that weirdly, this could end up being one of the stories of the season, as Fred VanVleet's injury earlier, post-All-Star break, kind of unlocked this version of the Raptors, and this version of the Raptors, after another Fred VanVleet injury, ended up unlocking the team that could potentially pull one of the greatest upsets in the history of the league. So I don't know how to feel about it, but I know one thing is for sure, that when they said Fred was doubtful, I was shockingly beyond okay with that.
So, yeah, I mean, look, a hobbled Fred is not meant for this series. Mm-hmm. It's just like it's too...
The a non-hobbled Fred wasn't meant for this series.
Give me bench leadership Fred.
The physical and athletic differences in this series are not... I mean, they're not really for anyone if you're banged up, but also, like, size makes up for a lot of stuff when you're not 100%. It's why Duncan Robinson could stick in the league and Matt Thomas can't, right? It's size goes a long way to making up margin of error. Now, I will say, they won Fred's minutes, the minutes Fred was on the court in Game 4. It wasn't...
And what about the rest of the series in its entirety?
But they lost everyone's minutes the rest of the series.
Yeah, but they won those minutes in Game 4. Like, that's
Game 3 is the game you point to. That's yeah, like,
but,
like
but look two, at his on-off game, stats in the series.
I know. Game 2, he got really cold in Game 2, but he was also the only reason they were in it early. Game 3 was bad. Mm-hmm. And then Game 4, he was okay until he got... Until he felt the pop or whatever.
He ripped his shirt off.
Yeah, so... Look, what you're saying is accurate. Like, if you don't have a point guard, you get to try different things with your other players on the roster, and you get to see what that looks like and what that feels like. And it's important. It's like, if you are going to lean into the Vision 6-9 and you are going to, you know, you're going to continue to build like this, and you're going to say, look, we don't need to go out and get a PG2 and a PG3 because Scotty Barnes and Pascal Siakam are that. This is really high fidelity information you're getting right now and during the course of the season. And you're right, it's been pretty effective. If you have at least one of Scotty Barnes or Pascal Siakam on the floor and no Fred VanVleet on the year, the team's net rating is +4.1. And that's like a 1,300 minute sample. That is pretty good. Now, again,
it just doesn't feel truthful. His the team's offensive rating.
What?
Off the court with Fred, I'm just saying in terms of like the thing with
what
him.
What do you mean? That was on a off the plus to three. Your point.
No. I know. I just mean like in terms of the on court off court thing, where it's like not. It doesn't feel truthful. It's like, but Fred was minus the offensive rating was down 15 points when he was on the court.
That
was
in the whole season. I said 1,300 minutes. That's the whole season. I'm getting there with the data to try to help you make your point.
Yeah, in this
series, 100 minutes. Without Fred and at least one of Pascal or Scotty on the floor, +15 net rating.
Yeah.
So, again, it's helpful information. It's really good learning experience. It's really informative for how you're going to build this thing. I would really suggest anyone trying to extrapolate keeps it to this series because Fred has carried this team at times. He's their best three-point shooter. And JD, you and I have talked about for basically two seasons now that the best version of this group is always going to be Fred as a deadly off-ball three-point shooter and secondary creator. He did have, like, even in that bad game three, 9 assists and no turnovers. So there is obviously a spot for him, and there's certainly a spot for him in that Miami series if you do get through. So that's all. The data is what it is, and the series has gone how it is. I just wouldn't extrapolate it too far past the Philadelphia 76ers, who are a bad matchup at the best of times for him.
Yeah, again, the offensive rating, -15.3 when he's on the court, +9.9 when he's on. 25-point swing with Fred VanVleet in this series. And okay, like, if you want to play the injury card, well, the game he was injured is the only...
I didn't play the injury card.
No. I'm saying to people at large, if we're playing the injury card, like, this is... The only game where he was a plus in the plus-minus column was the game that he got hurt in. You look across the board, too. It's not just the offensive rating. It's, like, the rebound percentage through the roof.
Well, yeah, because you've got huge dudes everywhere.
Of course. But the rebound percentage. The only thing that has been a real positive with Fred on the floor is the assist percentage goes up a little bit, and that makes sense because he's been a good distributor throughout the series. And that's it. Like, you look at everything else, the opponents everything. Like, the opponent's everything has been astronomically better when Fred has been on the floor in this series. And when he's been off, they've struggled. And it's just, it's kind of, I think it is worth noting that the series has tilted when there's been less Fred. Like, that's just been one of the stories of the series for me. You're right. I don't want to extrapolate too much because I still think Fred VanVleet was a deserving All-Star this year. I think that he is a winning player. I think you'd obviously rather have Fred at your disposal than not. But I also truly believe that the Raptors would not win this series had they kept playing Fred the minutes that he was getting. That the series tilted, not just because the Sixers are choking, but also because they changed the dynamic of the team. And that Vision 6-9 is a lot better when everyone is big than when there is the one guy who's smaller. And Fred's defense has been great throughout his career. We said he was second all NBA this year. But the playoffs are
likely
different.
To be, yeah. We don't know for sure yet, but probably.
The playoffs are different. And so when you're saying, hey, don't extrapolate data beyond this series, I would say, sure, to an extent, in that they're better off without him in this series. But I also would say that there's a little bit of extrapolation in terms of, hey, when you're moving forward, he does have to, I think, become a little bit more of a secondary offensive figure, because it just seems like Barnes and Siakam and this vision at attacking the basket and being able to get into the paint, when you have a guard who doesn't get into the paint, it's a limiting factor. And you've seen how that can hurt you in a playoff series. And so
yeah, and,
there's
and
a little
you've
bit
seen,
here.
And we've also seen how a guy who can get his three-point shot off and can knock him down swings a playoff series, right? Like, Milwaukee Bucks fans are still like, well, Fred VanVleet yep. didn't get so hot in that series from a couple
but
years
he was
ago.
The, he but was, he was the seam's sixth man.
Right. I know. And he's a secondary offensive player in that series. But he was still playing mm-hmm. 30 minutes a game in that series. And then the Golden State series, you see how valuable he can be even against larger players on the defensive end in the right matchup. So that's all. That's all I'm saying is, Philadelphia is a bad matchup. Milwaukee could be a bad matchup. But you look at that Miami team, that's a huge you need Fred VanVleet healthy series, because defensively, he's got guys he can check in that series, and they're going to zone you into oblivion if you don't have three-point shooters on the floor. So, obviously, I'd be very surprised if he gives it a go tonight. If he does, it would be, I'd imagine, in a very secondary role like we're talking about. Basically, hey, spot up and see how your hip feels. He has said from the moment that this injury happened, hey, basically it's a, hey, if you guys extend the series, I can, or if you guys make it out of this series, I can come back and give us a boost for the next round. I think that's probably where the focus is, where, you know, yeah, he could target Saturday for a return, but he could also target Monday, which would be game one of the next round. Game six is tonight. I'm very excited. 7 o'clock. Got the Jays at 3 o'clock as well before that. We've got a loaded show today. So Spike Eskin from the Rights of Ricky Sanchez podcast is coming on a little later. We'll talk to Vivek Jacob and former Raptors head coach Dwayne Casey a little later on as well about this series. We've also got Ben Nicholson-Smith, Justin Bourne. Loaded show. Producer Daniele, killing it. Let's take a break, though. Let's get a very big day in Toronto sports. Started off right with the A-list. That's next on the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590 The Fan.
Covering the Raptors in depth like no one else. The Raptor Show with Will Liu. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Baby Friday. It's going to be one hell of a Baby Friday because we got a couple big Toronto sports games today. Very excited for that. But before we get into all that exciting, legitimate stuff, let's have a little nonsense.
Now it's time for the A-List.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
So we sometimes do who's the bad guy or whatever as a segment here. Let me give you a story and see where you both fall on whose fault is this. A Massachusetts family lives on a golf course right on the 15th hole of Indian Pond Country Club in Kingston, Mass. They've lived there for 4 years, okay? Their house has been hit with nearly 700 golf balls in 4 years.
Yeah. Okay.
So they've had enough, apparently, that they have decided to sue the golf course. 26 windows have needed replacement over the time of them living there. The homeowner says it's a safety issue for them. They're sitting inside their home and golf balls are smashing through the windows. So they go to court. They're awarded $100,000 in damages and $3.5 million for distress. They win $5 million in this lawsuit for simply living on a golf course, which is their decision, yet people aren't great at driving the ball off the tee. So who's to blame in this situation? Which side of the story do you fall on?
No, the courts are right. And congrats to those people. Vindicated, justified. On the surface, this sounds obvious, like you just said it, where you go, oh, well, you live on a golf course. This is a hazard. 26 broken windows is a design flaw of the course and the people who sold the homes. Like, no one lives on a golf course and goes, oh, 26 broken windows. I've never heard of such a thing. It's like, you live on a golf course, there's the odd video of a ball ends up in your yard, right? One broken window, you go, okay. Two broken windows even, I'm like, we're going to court. Like, honestly.
26 windows.
You don't sell a house on the golf course and you're the automatically it's allowed for you to be the ball shagger like at the driving range. That's not what you become. You're supposed to feel safe in your home. You sell a house on a golf course, the implication is you're not getting smoked by golf balls. My first question where's the golf ball situation? They go, of course. There's not 26 golf balls breaking through your windows all the time. The distress element of this is a little funny, but I will say
$3.4 million for distress.
But I will say that I would hate that. Would suck living in a house all of a sudden 26 times. That's you're trying to work from home.
It's in just 4 years.
Yeah, it's 4 years. You're right. $4 million is an outrageous number for that. But that's. I don't know what this stuff is. That's just rich people doing, like, obviously they live on a golf course. They knew how to work the system. Congrats to them. And honestly, I'll never, ever have any sympathy for a golf course. So, you know, you designed it poorly. This is your fault.
So this is basically the plot of the 2007 film, Who's Your Caddy? Starring Big Boy, Lil Wayne, Uncle Phil, Terry Crews. They won't let the rapper be part of the country club, so he buys a chunk of the course, like a home that's on the course, so they have to let him in because he owns a piece of it. That's what this person is doing. They're now going to take that money and force their way into the course and get to be a part of the club. I've seen this movie before. It's really bad, but it's pretty funny. 2007.
I'm so disappointed because I thought Blake was actually making this up, and I was like, Blake's a genius to be able to make that up on the fly.
Jesper Parnevik's in it.
Yeah.
He's the one real golfer in this movie.
I'll pass on that movie. Yeah, I can't believe that got made.
I'm not sold on it. I did go see Everywhere, Everything, All at Once yesterday, but that's because it had the hype. Who's Your Caddy? It's not doing it for me.
Not only did it have it actually get made, it had a $7 million budget.
Wow, they could almost have paid for it, this family.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, so I got another golf story for you guys.
Okay, let's do it.
Whose side are you on this one? Okay.
I
like this, too. Florida man, so you know it's going to be good. Uh-huh. Florida men just always make headlines. There's a 64-year-old Herbert who is walking his dog alongside the 15th hole of Kings Point Golf Club.
I like how he's just a 64-year-old Herbert. Like, I was like, is that a different... It's like, okay, he's a guy named Herbert. Okay, got it.
He's walking his dog along the 15th hole of Kings Point Golf Club around 7 p.m. on Sunday. 74-year-old Robert comes out and says, hey, buddy, you can't walk your dog here. And Herbert just continues to go down the side of the course.
Okay.
Robert then chases Herbert and starts shooting him. And shoots him multiple times And
it's got dark real fast, Taylor. So I got to tell you, Herbert's there with his dog. He's on a course, and now it's turned into a run-and-gun shooting. Okay.
And he continues to get his cart, chase him down, get a club, and begin beating him with a gun in his hand and shooting him. He survives. So let me just get to that really quick. And
this is too much for 6:50 in the morning, but yes, okay.
So... obviously, you know what side it is, but this is two crazy things golf related in once. The man that was being shot at believed that he was going to be murdered, and this man has been arrested for attempted murder at this point. I don't know. I was walking your dog down the course at all help with this story that you're trespassing and that you're not allowed to be there. Should you be shot? For this type
A-list,
of thing.
This is the worst A-list item in the history of the A-list. So congrats to you. Big round of applause. You're like a dark and grisly assault at 6:50 in the morning happened. I kept waiting for the fun spin here. I'm like, where's the fun spin coming? There was no fun spin. She's like, a lunatic assaulted someone in Florida on a golf course. That's the A-list story. I was like, okay, an attempted murder happened. And A-list was like, guys, what do you think about the attempted murder? Walking the dog on the course, is it bad? She tried to turn it into like a fun spin about a dog on a golf course. It's like, there's no fun spin here, Ailish. That's just a dark, dark, dark story.
You ready for a deep cut here, JD?
Yes.
And he didn't get his chicken fingers.
Yeah, that is a deep cut. Oof. That is a deep cut, but it's too deep of a cut. They say don't do inside jokes on radio for that exact reason, but I get it.
It was an inside joke from the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was from the show. Yeah, you're right.
I must have been sick that day because I don't remember that one.
When you were gone, we all took a turn doing the A-list where we did our different items. And Cuthbert had a story where it was a golfer won a golf tournament.
Oh, I remember listening to this one, actually.
And then
at the airport. The
whole story was
Netflix
that.
Netflix doc, right?
No, the guy didn't get chicken fingers. Oh. Like, that was it. He's like, this golfer won a tournament, and then he went to an airport, and he tried to get chicken fingers, but he couldn't get the chicken fingers. And Blake and I were going, what else
so
is this?
So which was worse, this story or the
that,
chicken
this,
finger?
By far. This, oh, yeah. By far. Okay. At least the chicken finger story was light and hearted. This was just
only a chicken got murdered in the chicken
not
the
some
guy survived. Anyway,
I like how that was your justification. He's like, he's literally laying in his bed right now, like, I wish I had died. And Ailish is like, yeah, this is almost like the worst part of the assault. He's like, that happened, and then some lady in Toronto made fun of me.
Okay, so maybe
Ailish sees one movie on a weekday by herself, and now it's like, well, I'm just going to read thriller plots.
Okay, yeah. It wasn't a scary movie, but maybe it'll spark some text line about crazy things you've seen on a golf course. Okay, people get mad. People, you know, push each other. They ram each other with golf carts. I don't know.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
You know, putting it that way would have been good.
Well, I didn't get the chance.
Yeah, you did. Actually, you did. You really did.
Let me squeeze one more in. That's a fun one. Okay. Ooh. You'll like this. It has nothing to do with golf. So the NFL draft is today. It's in Las Vegas, so it'll be no fun at all. There is a lovely woman named Roxanne Price, a 27-year-old licensed sex worker, that has offered to give the number one overall pick a free experience. It's the best way to put it. She justifies it by saying that Las Vegas workers have taken a hit during the COVID pandemic, and with the NFL draft coming to town this week, it should be a great opportunity for them to recuperate some of the money that they had lost. If you're the number one draft pick tonight, you have something to possibly look forward to. Roxanne will be able to ease your stress.
Let me help you out here. The joke to make here is that at least you'll have something good happen to you because the first overall pick is going to the Jacksonville Jaguars. So you...
Wow, wow, wow.
There's your joke. Take
there
a shot at me. Take a shot at the Jaguars. At least something is happening to this poor kid, probably Aiden Hutchinson, who is, gonna join this legendary, wonderful franchise.
I can't believe you think it's Aiden Hutchinson, by the way. It's already reported. The Jaguars, fake Jaguars fan alert. Fact
Trayvon Walker?
Yeah, Blake 100% is a Oakland Raiders fan now because it's been announced that it's going to be Trayvon Walker. He's going to be the first pick of the draft tonight.
But like, there's also still rumors that they're looking to trade down and stuff.
No. It's they're taking him. They're taking the guy who is the most Jaguars pick ever because it's the guy with all the measurables but didn't have any real production in college. So Blake, just admit that you've moved on to the Raiders because that's a fact. That's already done. You've moved on. You're a Raiders guy. You can't wait to see who the Raiders are going to take in the draft tonight. Who cares if it's the – we have no more Jaguars opinions.
I'm going to come back after the break with my little Raiders hat on.
Yes.
The issue is that they don't pick.
They don't pick. Either way.
Anyway, what happens in Vegas? Raiders fan. Stays in Vegas, possibly?
Not really, because you just said, like, the whole thing.
She put it on blast.
So like, yeah, exactly.
Roxanne wants everyone to know.
And I'm pretty sure what happens in Vegas – stays in Vegas is dead now. I think they have a new slogan and it sucks. It's like Vegas, it's happening here or something because it sounded a little shady. Let's take a break. Let's come back. And speaking of shady, let's see how Sixers fans are feeling. Spike Eskin is co-host of the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast, the Sixers podcast. We have like 45 things written down that are concerning for the Sixers that we want them to go through. That's next on the Fan Morning Show. JD Blake and Ailer Sports at 590 The Fan.